The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, we had us a historic week in baseball this week, so let's get right into the week of baseball, beginning with Monday. Spencer Strider has continued his absolute domination with the Atlanta Braves. He is just a strikeout king this season, and it continued yet again on Monday night. He had 10 strikeouts in a 4-1 win against the Minnesota Twins. It was actually his fifth double-digit strikeout game of the season. So this guy, he not only has been leading the league in strikeouts all season long, but now he just keeps widening that gap. This guy is just getting better as the season goes on, just as the Braves are. I mean, they are on fire right now, hottest team in the league, and they seem to be getting better. And Spencer Strider is just, he's one of the main reasons why. And if he just keeps this up, we may have us a future Hall of Famer that we're looking at. This guy's having quite the career so far, and it's only begun. So it's going to be interesting to see if he continues what he's doing for years to come. And, I mean, I'm fully expecting to see the Braves in the playoffs, so it's going to be interesting to see if he's able to keep this going all season. But he's definitely the strikeout king for the 2023 season. Then on Tuesday night, it actually was a two home run night for quite a few guys in the league, beginning with, of course, Shohei Ohtani, who's yet another guy I've been discussing for the majority of baseball season. He had two home runs. He went 3-for-3 that night, but he also pitched 6 1/3 inning, and he also had 10 strikeouts in a 4-2 win over the Chicago White Sox. Then Ronald Acuna Jr. of the aforementioned Atlanta Braves, he also had a two home run night in a 6-2 win over the Minnesota Twins. And then Brandon Nimmo of the New York Mets also had a two home run night, and they really needed it because the Mets have just been awful this season. But it was actually in a 7-2 win over the Milwaukee Brewers. Tuesday was a crazy night for the bats. And then on Wednesday night was the historic night of the week, and that was starting pitcher Domingo Germán of the New York Yankees pitched a perfect game. This has only happened 24 times in the history of Major League Baseball. This has not happened since 2012 when Felix Hernandez of the Seattle Mariners, he pitched a perfect game. This was an 11-0 win over the Oakland A's, and like I said, it was only the 24th in Major League Baseball history. Big for him because Germán has he's had a very up and down career. He's had some really solid games. He's had really nice stretches where he's just been very dominating. But then when he's down, he is down. He's also suffered quite a few injuries over his time as a New York Yankee. So it was kind of shocking to see him pitch a perfect game, but at the same time, it really wasn't because this guy, he definitely has his stuff, but so you can't take this away from him. This is also the fourth New York Yankee starting pitcher to have a perfect game. If you don't know what a perfect game is, it is exactly what you would expect it to be. Basically, if you are a starting pitcher, wins and losses are they're your statistic, and so just because you're the beginning of what whether or not a run is scored, and also the ball is always in your hands at all times. Basically, it means not one hit was on, nobody hit you, you didn't allow any walks, and of course, no runs were scored. So it basically just everybody who comes up to bat, you sit their asses right on down. So that's what a perfect game is. Out of the New York Yankees who have also done this, Don Larsen did it in 1956. David Wells did it in 1998 and David Cohn did it in 1999. So it's no shock that this has happened yet again with the New York Yankees, but a very historic moment. As I said, it's only happened 24 times in the history of the league. So that's how big of a deal it is. So congratulations to Domingo Germán. I mean, not only did he need it, but the Yankees needed it. They've been struggling so far since Aaron Judge hit the injured list. So congratulations to him, but we'll see how the Yankees, if that gets them to rally around it, even though the pitching has not been the Yankees' issue this year. It's really been the offense has either been hit or miss. They're either really hot or they are really cold, and they were actually really hot that night against the Oakland A's, as well as their starting pitching. Now let's move on to the NBA. I actually completely forgot. Usually I make my predictions for the beginning of the season, how I feel like it's going to play out. And then I usually recap it at the end of the season, usually right before the championship game. But this year I was in around the NBA Finals. I actually was in Hawaii, so I think that is part of the reason why this slipped my mind. So I felt like let's go ahead and recap what my predictions were to at the beginning of the NBA season and see how everything panned out. I'll just let you know right now, it was pretty much all wrong. So let's get started with how I thought it was going to pan out in the Western Conference. I'll just give you a rundown of all the top eight seeds in each conference, and then the conference finals, and then who I thought was going to win the NBA Finals as well. So in the Western Conference, I thought the number one overall seed was going to be the Golden State Warriors. They were not the number one overall seed, but they were definitely not as dominating as I thought they were going to be. Then the number two overall seed I had was the Dallas Mavericks, which is absolutely hilarious because that loser trash team didn't even make the playoffs. And they were pretty much one of the biggest disappointments in the 2022-2023 season. Then my number three seed, I had the Denver Nuggets, the NBA champion. So I did expect them to have a decent season at least. Then the number four overall seed, I had my Los Angeles Lakers. They were not anywhere near the number four seed, but they actually did make the Western Conference Finals, which I did not expect them to do. Then I had the number five seed as the Memphis Grizzlies. The number six seed is the New Orleans Pelicans. The number seven seed, I had the Los Angeles Clippers. And then rounding out the eight, I had the Minnesota Timberwolves. Then the Eastern Conference, I had my number one overall seed as the Philadelphia 76ers, which wasn't really off. Then the number two seed, I had the Milwaukee Bucks, also not really off. Then the number three seed, I had the Miami Heat. So I actually did expect the Miami Heat to be a pretty decent team this season. They actually ended up going into the play-in and then being the number eight seed overall. So I did expect them to make the playoffs, but to not be as bad as they were. But I also didn't have them going to the Eastern Conference Finals as well. But I actually had high expectations for the Heat this year. Then at number four, I had the Cleveland Cavaliers, another team I had high expectations for. Then number five, the Brooklyn Nets, who were just, not only were they awful, but the team just got absolutely blown up midway through the season. Then at number six, I had the Atlanta Hawks. Number seven, I had the Boston Celtics, which I was completely wrong about. They were a lot better than I anticipated they would be. I had them just kind of suffering just because of the whole situation with their coach to start the season. I just felt that was going to be a distraction, but obviously it was not at all. And then rounding out the eight in the Eastern Conference, number eight seed, I had the Chicago Bulls. Then my Western Conference Finals, I had the Golden State Warriors versus the Dallas Mavericks. That is not what happened. It was actually my Los Angeles Lakers versus the Denver Nuggets, and the Lakers got absolutely obliterated in that, but I did not have either of those teams there. And then, of course, the Eastern Conference Finals, I had the Philadelphia 76ers versus the Milwaukee Bucks, and that ended up being the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics. And then so my NBA Finals prediction was the Golden State Warriors versus the Philadelphia 76ers. I was not even close in that department. Ended up being the Denver Nuggets versus the Miami Heat. And then I had my champions as the Philadelphia 76ers, and it wound up being the Denver Nuggets. So I was completely off, as I normally am. That's usually why I recap that, because it's funny how you look at things at the beginning of the season and then just to see how things turn out. Now, of course, I don't care if I'm right or wrong, because they're just stupid-ass predictions, and I go into my predictions knowing I'm more than likely going to be wrong on the majority of them because that's just kind of how it goes. You never know how things are going to look on paper. You can't account for injuries. You can't account for just teams being terrible. You can't account for teams being good. It's just the way it goes. But that is how my NBA season predictions went. And yeah, I wasn't even close. Speaking of the NBA, the offseason actually officially begins today. Free agents can begin to sign, and contracts could be signed away, and trades can begin. The big news actually so far is James Harden actually decided to opt into his contract with the Philadelphia 76ers. That does not mean he's going to be staying with the 76ers. It sounds like he's going to be traded. No idea where he's going to be traded because obviously this just started, but that's basically the major news of the NBA, and we're going to start seeing people sign here in the coming days and be traded away in the coming days, and the NBA offseason begins today, and we're going to be seeing a whole lot of movement and as we already have, but we're definitely going to be seeing a lot more as the weekend progresses. All right, so now let's get into my top five list for the week. Since we had a historic thing happen this week with Domingo Germán pitching a perfect game, and it's only happened 24 times, I decided my top five this week is going to be the top five perfect games of all time. Because, yes, all perfect games. If you have a perfect game, that's as a pitcher, that is hell. Even if you are playing in the game, because in a perfect game, well, yes, the pitcher is a huge part of it. Of course, the catcher is a huge part of it because they're catching the pitcher. But then also the defense is all the outfielders and the infielders, they play a role in this too, because there's lots of perfect games where a big catch happens. And it plays a big role into it. So not every perfect game is the same. Other perfect games are more dominating than others, as I found out when I went through them. So I decided this week I'm going to go ahead and rank the top five perfect games of all time. So let's begin with number five, which is definitely, I watched this. And this one is definitely, since it's my show and I'm a San Francisco Giants fan, I'm going to put a San Francisco Giant on there. And that is Matt Cain back on June 13th of 2012, San Francisco Giants versus the Houston Astros. This was actually a down year for Matt Cain. Matt Cain was definitely a great Giant. He, for the most part, his career was stellar. He was a strikeout king. He was an ace. He was the ace for a couple of seasons. It basically went from like Tim Lincecum as our dominating pitcher, then to Matt Cain as our dominating pitcher. And then we also had Zito in there for a while as well. And then, of course, Madison Bumgarner, my favorite Giant of all time. But Matt Cain, he was definitely one of the workhorses. He was definitely one of the reasons why we won three of those World Series that we did. But 2012 was not really a good season for Matt Cain. It was definitely kind of like the end of his career, the downside of his career. But it wasn't shocking that he pitched a perfect game. Not only did he pitch a perfect game, but as I said, he was a strikeout king. And he actually ended up tying Sandy Koufax with 14 strikeouts in a perfect game. As I mentioned, usually in a perfect game, there's a huge catch or some big defensive play made. And in this game in particular, Gregor Blanco in the outfield had this huge seventh inning catch. It was just one where he had to just like reach out and dive and just got it with the tip of his glove and made the big play and just kept the perfect game intact. And it was a great game to watch. There's actually been many, many historic moments I've watched as a Giants fan. But Matt Cain's perfect game was definitely one of them. And it was no shock that he did it as well. And so that was number five on my top five perfect games. Number four on my top five perfect games is Don Larsen, New York Yankees versus the Brooklyn Dodgers on October 8th, 1956. Now, this one absolutely had to be somewhere in the top five. And the reason why is because this is the one and only time a perfect game has been pitched in the postseason. This actually happened in the World Series, Game 5 of the World Series, in which the Yankees would go on to win in Game 7. But as I said, this was the only perfect game in postseason history, and the New York Yankees ended up winning this World Series. It wasn't a completely dominating pitching effort compared to a lot of the other perfect games, but since it was in the World Series, it mattered the most. It absolutely has to make the top five. Then at number three in my top five perfect games, I have Randy Johnson. On May 18th of 2004, this is when he played for the Arizona Diamondbacks versus the Atlanta Braves. At this point in time, Randy Johnson was pretty much at the end of his career. The dude was 40 years old. He's actually the oldest pitcher of all time to pitch a perfect game. And he had 13 strikeouts, so that was Randy Johnson, if you don't know. If you missed out on Randy Johnson's career, I feel sorry for you because this guy was such a pitcher. I mean, he actually killed a bird with one of his pitches in game. Now, the bird did actually fly off, but I don't see how this thing survived afterwards, but he blew this bird up. But not in this game. He actually blew the Braves up in this game. As I said, it was just a really dominating game from a 40-year-old, but he still had it at that time. And man, Randy Johnson, it was just something to add to the already stellar career he had. This was one of the few things missing from his resume, so he added it on May 18th of 2004. Then at number two on my top five perfect games, Roy Halladay. May 29th of 2010, Philadelphia Phillies versus the Florida Marlins. I mean, not only did Roy Halladay have a perfect game in this season, but this was his perfect season other than winning a World Series. My San Francisco Giants ended up winning the World Series this year, their first of three. Man, Roy Halladay, this is another guy. If you missed Roy Halladay's career, you missed a good, like he was dominating for this 3 to 5 year period he was in the league. He was like a silent pitcher where he just would kill you and you wouldn't even really expect it. But man, he was so consistent. And this perfect game he had, it was in a 1-0 win. And it was typical Roy Halladay fashion. This 2010 season, he had 21 wins, which led the league. 9 complete games, which led the league. 4 shutout wins, which led the league. He had pitched in 250 and 2/3 innings, which also led the league. And he had a 7.3 strikeout to walk ratio, which also led the league. So, I mean, really, this season, he won the second Cy Young of his career. And then he also in the NLDS had a 1-walk, no hit versus the Cincinnati Reds. So, like, he pretty much had the best season you possibly could have for a pitcher, and to add a perfect game into it. And honestly, this almost was going to be number one, but the reason why I picked number one is just because it was a pitching duel and a pitching battle, and of course with one of the greatest pitchers of all time. But Roy Halladay, I remember watching this game too. This was just an amazing effort. This season, I remember this season that Roy Halladay had, and I remember when I was kind of going over the list of 24 perfect games that we've had in history. And I remember when I was just going through it and I was like, shit, Roy Halladay. I remember that game. I remember that season he had. And actually, I just remember him as a pitcher. He was a great pitcher. And this was one of his most shining moments of his career. But number one on my top five perfect games, Sandy Koufax. September 9th, 1965, Los Angeles Dodgers versus the Chicago Cubs. This was when you used to really be pitching. Because back in these days, man, pitchers would go, not only would they pitch the entire game, but they'd pitch extra innings too. And this game is the last time, where both pitchers pitched a complete game and only one of them had one hit. That used to actually happen. It's happened a couple times in the league. It used to happen a lot more often back then, because these days, you're lucky if your starting pitcher gets past the sixth inning or makes it to the sixth inning. It's just insane. But these days, they used to pitch. And this was just a back and forth between Koufax and Bob Hendley of the Chicago Cubs. But this one, Sandy Koufax, he set the record, had 14 strikeouts. And this lasted, like I said, 50 years in between when Matt Cain tied it in 2012. But Sandy Koufax is one of the greatest pitchers of all time, if not the greatest pitcher of all time. I haven't done that list yet, so I don't know, really know where he'd rank for me, but I do know he is one of the GOATs, and this was just a back-and-forth affair. It absolutely has to be number one, in my opinion, just because it was a battle. I mean, a battle between just two pitchers who just would not let up, and Hendley was the only one who made a mistake, one-hit mistake, and that was it. But Koufax pitched one of the greatest games you will ever have. And so that is number one on my top five perfect games of all time. So we've got a huge weekend of baseball stacked up here. And enjoy the weekend of baseball. And I will talk to you all on Monday.